This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, you should go to our new look, VSIN.com, right now. It's optimally mobile viewing for you right now, optimized for mobile. And we have best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides. If you go to our homepage, our Tyler Shoemaker has his WNBA best bets for tomorrow's card. We also have best bets from Adam Burke on Major League Baseball for games that have yet to get underway, if you are so inclined to get some betting action in, as well as trends from our Steve Mackinnon. As I'm doing this read, Joe, I'm watching it become official, the 11 seed, Stefano Tsitsipas at Wimbledon. He goes down, our biggest upset of the day, as Emil Ruusuvuori, the young native of Finland, takes out Tsitsipas in four sets. So the bottom half of the draw today, the two biggest upsets. Your guy, Taylor Fritz, now has a much clearer path, although he will still have to go through Novak Djokovic. That is the biggest name in the bottom half of the draw. Yeah, Djokovic. Yeah, what is it? Only 20 plus Grand Slam champions won. But bottom half of the draw now much more open and filled with more unheralded and unseeded players. Certainly so at this point than the top half, which we already saw the top seed Jannik Sinner struggle yesterday with fellow Italian Matteo Berrettini. I'm sure that was a tough watch for you, Joe, as an Italian. You're like, who do I root for? But it's going to be a tough path there for Sinner at the top half. Advantage Djokovic. I'll be fascinated to see where those futures odds get reposted, as I'm seeing Djokovic right now at 4-1 here as it stands at the moment for the futures board.
Yeah, bottom. Look, Ben, we talked about it last segment, right? I think that the parity is at its highest level ever, especially when it comes to Grand Slams. Obviously, there's been some at some of the lesser tournaments, but when you're dealing with the big boys, parity is at its highest level ever. I think this little youth movement is just going to do nothing but great things for the game. And, you know, hopefully we get maybe a first time winner, one of these up-and-comer rising stars to do the job here.
If these seeds hold, you would get Sinner, Alcaraz, who are the two favorites, meeting in the top half semifinal. That's why those guys on the bottom half now, all of a sudden, very, very intriguing. You know, it's also intriguing. Major League Baseball trade deadline. We'll talk about the specific card here and the rest of the games coming up in a little bit. We have a couple games getting underway at 4 p.m. Eastern. Games also now coming down to the wire and just ending on this loaded 4th of July holiday slate. But the trade deadline's not too far away. I want to get Joe's thoughts on his top five trade candidates coming up here. And what's interesting is, as we expect, all these teams you have isolated players on are all teams with sub-500 records. But I would say the one that really stands out to me, you even labeled it a surprise pick, is a team that most view to be big buyers here at the deadline, even though they're last place in the NL Central, and that is the Chicago Cubs. So I want to get your thoughts first on Justin Steele and the state of the Cubs in general, since they are, I wouldn't say, you know, popular for a buy low candidate team, but they're certainly of that group that you think, okay, if they buy, if they add some pieces to the bullpen, you could at least see a world in which the Cubs make a run at one of the three wild card spots, even if you don't believe in them long term. But you are going to zag on that thought and look at Justin Steele as one of your top candidates.
Yeah, Justin Steele is my surprise pick here, Ben. And look, realistically speaking, there is a very good chance he doesn't go anywhere. Even if the Cubs don't sell or they don't buy, that they just stand pat and keep Justin Steele, because he has not 2.5 years of control like guys like Garrett Crochet or Luis Robert Jr. Justin Steele still has 3.5 years of club control. So fully acknowledging that this would be a long shot, but if you look at the way things are going right now in Chicago, yes, looks like they're going to have a big win today against Philadelphia. It's been a horrible season. They brought in Craig Counsell. Dave Ross did a fine job. They cut him loose. They brought in Craig Counsell. They thought they were going to, with the new manager coming over from Milwaukee, that they were going to overtake Milwaukee, that they were going to run the NL Central, and everything has blown up. Dansby Swanson has looked absolutely terrible. Cody Bellinger has taken a step back from what he was a year ago. Ian Happ looks a little better right now, but started the year absolutely abysmally. The Cubs have just been a train wreck. You look at Justin Steele's season, actually been really good, especially considering the guy has zero wins. He can't buy a win in Wrigleyville. They're giving him no run support. The bullpen, which you mentioned, Ben, has been atrocious. They don't need one trade to fix the bullpen. They need 7 trades to fix the bullpen. So as far as the Cubs, they are out of it. I would not encourage or invite a long shot ticket on them. I don't see value there because I don't see them finishing above 500, let alone making the playoffs. I think over the next 3 weeks, as the deadline nears, they're just going to fall further into the abyss that is 13th place in the National League. And I think it is about time to count the Cubs out. So whether or not they part with Steele and his 3.5 years of control, that may be a long shot, but that would bring in a hell of a haul, a hell of a return for a guy like Justin Steele, who might need a change of setting. He's pitching his heart out every time he's on the bump, and he can't buy a win. It doesn't matter how many quality starts he's got.
It is very telling that the Chicago Cubs have now slipped all the way after their latest losing skid, having lost 8-10, and in quite embarrassing fashion to that degree, have slipped all the way now to 8-1 to even make the postseason. A lot of people were saying, oh yeah, at 4.5, 5-1, this is a team they will likely bolster themselves, but you watch how unimpressive they are with the fundamentals. They lead the team in outs recorded on the base pass. It's a team that struggles defensively to make the simple plays. We have seen Justin Steele lose his freaking mind at his own players for that happened in his last start in Milwaukee. I can see where you're going here. I don't have any belief, as much as the Cubs front office might have belief, that they will be a contender to even sniff the postseason, 6.5 back of that group of teams there tied for the final spot in the NL wild card. To the rest of your guys, and you're all looking to isolate AL players. I think the biggest name of these, he might not be number one, but he's a guy who most people a couple years ago would have said, oh, there's no way this guy is leaving Toronto, and that's Vladdy Jr. It really does speak, though, to what a disaster of a year it's been for Toronto. And on top of the fact they play in arguably the most loaded division in baseball, the AL East, where there is so little margin for error if you are a team in that division and you start to struggle.
Yeah, I think a lot of people expected the Blue Jays to do what the Red Sox have done, Ben, and that was, you know, start a bit slow. Although for Toronto, it was beneath expectations. For Boston, starting the year 500 was actually above expectations. But I think people thought Toronto would be the team to start a bit slow and then reinsert themselves in the wild card race. Instead, Boston has been that team. Even Tampa Bay, they've been flirting with a 500 record lately. They're right there with Houston, just a couple games behind the Red Sox, the Twins, the Royals. Toronto has absolutely fallen out of the race. And Vladdy, who a couple of years ago, after an MVP runner-up season, it seemed like this guy might get a lifetime contract. His dad, of course, was great with the Montreal Expos. It just seemed like fate that Vladdy and his dad would both be legends north of the border. And he might be coming south of the border. So we'll see what happens with him. He famously said a couple of years ago he would never join the Yankees. Well, now it looks like the Yankees might make a play at him. I mean, among other teams, your Milwaukee Brewers, I could see making a play at Vladdy. The Seattle Mariners could make a move for Guerrero. So even the Houston Astros, as they reinsert themselves in the playoff race, they need help at first base. So I could see Vladdy on the move. You know, he's not in a walk year. He's got, I believe, a year and a half left of club control. He'd bring in a nice haul for the Blue Jays. I definitely could see him on the move. And then you look at the starting pitching on that list outside of Justin Steele. Look, Garrett Crochet is the obvious. This guy's become appointment television. It's like when Jacob deGrom burst onto the scene and every fifth day, people, not just in New York, but across the country, were tuning in. Garrett Crochet, if you look at White Sox ratings when he pitches as opposed to the rest of their games, there has to be an astronomical difference there. He's got 2.5 years of club control. I don't know what they're doing down in Mississippi, but they're raising lefties who can throw the ball pretty darn well. Justin Steele, Garrett Crochet, a couple of Mississippi lefties. Yeah, this kid Crochet, between him and Robert, more so him, the White Sox could really accelerate this rebuild if they part ways with those two guys, because 2.5 years of club control for an ace. And yes, I will call him an ace, even though it's his first full year starting. That's just incredible. And then Jack Flaherty, I'll be quick on this one. I've got more specific sights set on him after being really disappointing with Baltimore last year, post trade deadline, took a 1-year prove it deal with the Tigers. The Los Angeles Dodgers need help in their rotation. He's from the greater LA area, went to Harvard Westlake on that team that was stacked with Max Fried and Lucas Giolito. I could see the Dodgers making a play to bring Flaherty home for the final stretch here. Walker Buehler has stunk. Yamamoto's gotten hurt. Kershaw still isn't back. You can never have enough starting pitching. If you have too many guys, deal with turning, you know, which two guys you're going to throw in the bullpen when that time comes for the postseason. But Flaherty, I think right now, is a necessity for the LA Dodgers.
Gavin Stone, in a lot of respects, has been a top two pitcher for the Dodgers this year, was shelled last night against Arizona. A very off the grid sort of start for him with how consistent Stone had been, but it also speaks to the lack of depth when Gavin Stone, more of an unproven younger guy, is your top option. We expect to start seeing these deals come in within the next few days, start to trickle through. We already saw one deal yesterday, Joe. What do you make of the Savali trade there to the Brewers, someone who follows the card, follows the movement of players every single day here?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad deal for Milwaukee, right, Ben? You would know more about their farm system than I would, being a fan of the team. I don't think they gave up a whole lot. Savali, I loved him early with Cleveland, and ever since that trade to Tampa, he had, I think, one or two great starts immediately, and then has been really subpar as a member of the Tampa Bay Rays. So I think it's a good deal for Milwaukee because, again, you can correct me if I'm wrong here. I don't believe they gave up a whole lot. So it's kind of a, if it works out, great. If not, you know, I mean, you can't be doing this opener thing forever. The Brewers have been toying around doing some weird stuff with their starting pitching. Obviously, no Burns, no Woodruff at the moment. But at some point, you just need a guy who can hopefully give you six innings, you know, practically every fifth day.
Gregory Barrios, who the Brewers give up to the Rays, top 30 prospect. He's 21st in the Brewers system, but yeah. Prospect infielders, a dime a dozen. You will happily part with them for a guy who can help you maintain your lead in the division. When we come back on Sharp Money, it's a fresh hour. Two games getting set to get underway in the Major League Baseball card. We'll break him down next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Right now on our homepage, vsin.com, Wimbledon best bets for tomorrow. They're already out from our Zach Cohen, even though there's still action wrapping up today at the All England Club. And Matt Williams, his NFL prop betting tips for 2024. That is part of so much off-season NFL content we have, and that's why we are also bringing on the man who will join us in just a second. Jeff Ulrich going to join us here on our Progressive Guest Line as we continue. They are doing the whole Andy Murray retirement tour. That's what, as much as it is the 4th of July, Joe Cirillo, I'm appreciating it. A legend in his own right. He was still in the mixed doubles, by the way, with Edema Raducanu, their fellow Brit that he'll be playing with. So he's not totally done yet, but they're doing the whole walk of honor and they really are talking this up, but when you're the first Brit to win Wimbledon in ages, first in the modern era, you got to give him his due, right? I mean, this is great. I appreciate this. This is great stuff. I'm more intrigued than you. I know you're intrigued by your Reds Marlins random 11th inning game, Joe, but you know.
Red Sox Marlins, and that $1.40 price now is unplayable. Sox are up 4-2, one out, bases juice, top 11 here. I'm doing the patriotic thing, Ben, and that's I've got four baseball games on right now. MLB big inning split screen action on the 4th of July. That's how we celebrate this holiday.
That's where I feel like I have to keep doing the bit. I'm going to just intentionally say the wrong team. I'm just going to, you know, ignore the baseball, even though that's the only thing we have to bet on now, essentially, the rest of the day. Cool. We'll get into that in a little bit.
It works out. We all know Ben is short for Benedict Arnold.
So absolutely. That is a fact that cannot be misrepresented in any other way. To our Progressive guest line, we appreciate him giving us some time here on this 4th of July, as Jeff Ulrich will give us a few minutes on our Progressive guest line, a PGA, NHL, and NFL analyst. You see him at DraftKings, also at the Fantasy Grind, joining us right now. And we'll talk some NFL here first, then get into some of his NHL takeaways following a bevy of free agent moves, a couple of futures he's eyeing on. But as far as the NFL, we just released our NFL guide. One division that you are really eyeing in particular, Jeff, is the AFC South here, and taking a look at a future. It's a division where a lot of buzz has been garnered toward the Houston Texans, but what's a different team outside of the Texans that you see having the ability to make some noise this year within the South?
I think the South is really interesting. I mean, I think you've got a team in the Texans that are good. I mean, I'm not expecting like huge regression from them or anything, or necessarily want to go out of my way to go against CJ Stroud. But I think that the second team of the division, Jacksonville Jaguars, do have a bunch of question marks. I mean, Trevor Lawrence, we could be talking about him a year from now as being the worst quarterback in this division. I really legitimately think, and I'm not suggesting he's terrible or anything, but this is a pretty stacked division all of a sudden with young talent. You've got Anthony Richardson coming back. You've got Stroud. Will Levis, I still think, is underrated. I got Brian Callahan in the Titans. I think that the Titans make for an interesting futures bet, but the team I'm really high on is the Colts. At plus 310 on DraftKings, they're behind the Jacksonville Jaguars in odds. I think these teams should be flipped at the very least. Really like what the Colts did in the draft, getting Leitu, getting Mitchell, just basically falling to them. Leitu may be the best defensive player in the draft. You add in a healthy Anthony Richardson, a good insurance policy in Joe Flacco, and what I think is a really, really good head coach in Shane Steichen, who almost took this team to the playoffs with Gardner Minshew, changed the offense midseason. I think the Colts are underrated. I really like them as a division winner bet. My favorite way to play them is still just over 8.5 wins, but this is a team I just think has a lot of upside, and I think that playing for the upside with the Colts this year is something you should be doing, especially at these levels, like I said, when they're behind the Jaguars.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't know if you heard an audible wow come out of me when you said Trevor Lawrence could be the worst quarterback in this division. I don't think he'd fall behind anyone on Tennessee, but that wow is actually because I agree with you that he could at least be considered the third best quarterback in this division moving forward, man. I'm really high on AR working with Steichen for a full season And you mentioned Mitchell. Now he's got some actual viable threats besides Michael Pittman, who's drawn so much attention from opposing defenses. I think the Colts are definitely scary, and I agree on that way to play them at 8.5 as opposed to the division, because I still think this is Houston's division. So many people are trying to say we're going to have a sophomore slump from CJ Stroud and company. I don't see it from Stroud. I don't see it from a coach and a leader like D'Amico Ryans. What do you make of the Texans, who on paper, adding Diggs, adding Mixon, I believe are geared up to really contend, not just for the division, but for the AFC championship?
Absolutely. And look, like when you have a talent like CJ Stroud, again, it's almost, you know, you don't want to just put him in Patrick Mahomes territory, but you are betting against one of the best quarterbacks, top three quarterbacks in the league. It's not something you want to do. So if I was balancing my bets, which I will be doing, I mean, majority will be going just on over wins or something, but certainly sprinkling in the Colts at this level. I do think the Texans will be a force to be reckoned with this year. And I agree, like if they do regress, I still think that they're a team that you have to project to make the playoffs. And if they get into the playoffs with the kind of depth they have, certainly could be, you know, a team to reckon with. So no, Texans aren't necessarily a team I'm looking to drop off, you know, in terms of like the Titans and Levis. We'll see with Will Levis. I'm pretty high on him, to be honest, especially working with Brian Callahan, but agreed, you'd have to put him behind at least Trevor Lawrence right now. But certainly, you know, the Texans and the Colts, two teams I think could both have strong just outcomes this year, and potentially do something in the playoffs as well.
Jeff Ulrich with us here on VSiN Sharp Money. Follow him at The Fantasy Grind, thefantasylife.com. Before we transition into some of your NHL offseason thoughts here with some intriguing futures prices out there, so many options now just to play the season-long props, whether that is the stats on the over-unders, on whether it's yardage, touchdown, or leaders in individual categories here. There is a lot you have to break down. Where did you start? What stands out to you as far as the value in those markets?
No, I mean, look, this is something like over the next month and with training camp, you know, looking for potential targets in the over-unders and the totals and stuff like that. We talked a little bit, you know, about like pre-program here about Breece Hall. And I think that, you know, looking at the most regular season rushing yards, Christian McCaffrey isn't necessarily a player I want to go up against too much. This isn't a market that I'm looking to dive into, but I do think Breece Hall props this year are something you should be considering, you know, a full year potentially working with Aaron Rodgers behind a better offensive line. I mean, if anyone is going to be able to come up, I mean, and potentially like take the throne or just, you know, put in some kind of immaculate season, Breece Hall, as we saw from his college tape and just what he's done in the NFL, has the explosiveness to do it. So plus 800, you know, in that market, you've got Jonathan Taylor working with, you know, a rushing quarterback potentially siphoning off carries. You've got Saquon Barkley doing the same thing, and I just don't really believe as much in the explosiveness of Saquon Barkley anymore. Breece Hall plus 800 is pretty tempting for most rushing yards, and I think that, you know, if you want to play for the upside of Breece Hall this year, that's a way to do it. I mean, the number isn't huge, it's not massive, and you're going against a really good market leader, but it's also the running back. It's volatile, injuries can happen. We did just hear Kyle Shanahan talk about dialing back Christian McCaffrey's carries. I don't believe that's going to happen, but it certainly still could be a thing. So yeah, Breece Hall, definitely a player I'm looking to play for the upside. We'll probably get some exposure to him potentially for most rushing yards.
You know, Jeff, when you look at that NFL futures market, the Minnesota Vikings, 6.5 seems to be the number we're seeing most places. DraftKings, you can get them under 6.5 at plus money, plus 130. Am I crazy for thinking there's no such thing as a lock? But when you look at that quarterback room of Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy, who I call Zach Wilson with a higher IQ, I mean, I think under 6.5 is the move. Am I wrong here?
I think we're pretty much in line here with the Vikings, which is good to hear. No, you're not crazy. I love this bet. It's probably going to be potentially my biggest bet of the year. We're going to see how training camp goes. But go look at the Vikings opening schedule. They play the Giants. And then it's like nine teams where they're going to be underdogs probably in every single game. It is ugly. They're in a division with the Green Bay Packers and the Lions, potentially one of the top five defenses with the Bears too. Although I'm not super high on the Bears, but it's a tough division. They're probably going to start Sam Darnold, which is what the whisperings are. J.J. McCarthy probably not ready. Sam Darnold going against that gauntlet. Yeah, I will fade that all day. I'm surprised it's still plus money. Wouldn't be shocked if by the time we got to you know, the start of the regular season, that under 6.5 wins is more like minus 120 or something.
Jeff Ulrich does great work, not only for the NFL. Check out his weekly PGA write-ups on his site. Follow him at the Fantasy Grind, thefantasylife.com. And also all the rest of us here in the U.S. are just eating grilled meats on the 4th of July. People north of the border are breaking down hockey offseason and already getting their futures bets out there. So with Jeff joining us, kind of give us some time here from north of the border, one of our favorite Canadian guests we bring on the show very often here on VSiN. What early moves have you been the most impressed with amidst specific teams there in the NHL?
I mean, look, the team that's making the flashiest moves is definitely the Predators. And I mean, you've got to give them a shout out. Like they're going for it. They had a really competitive team last year. You know, they went toe to toe with Vancouver and they just didn't quite have, you know, what you'd call like the upside necessarily to win that 7-game series. Vancouver definitely was probably a little bit underrated, but certainly went out and, made some moves. I mean, getting Marchessault and getting Stamkos, that's exactly the kind of upside that I think they were missing in that series against Vancouver, where just a couple key goals is going to tilt the series in your favor. We saw the Oilers, you know, be able to get it with a couple big games for Connor McDavid. Now the Predators add a couple big wheels here. This is a team that is still, you know, sort of just languishing around plus 1800 right now in the Stanley Cup odds. I also kind of think that they're a little bit interesting for the division win. They've got the Avalanche, who's got real salary cap problems ahead of them, did not go out of the playoffs very well either. And then the Dallas Stars, who, I mean, I'm not sure how much more ceiling the Dallas Stars have. I think the Predators as the Central Division winner, plus 380, not worth a potential bet, and certainly maybe even looking for over regular season wins when that market comes out on the Predators. So like them, I think the Red Wings also kind of an interesting early season, potentially Stanley Cup bet.
No question on that. Jeff Ulrich, great to see you as always, man. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
Yeah, cannot deny the leadership. Stamkos, Marchessault, each going to Nashville there in 2024-25. When we come back, we'll talk odds to get the top seed in each AL and NL with Joe when we come back.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is the final hour of Sharp Money from VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Back in downtown Las Vegas, I'm Ben Wilson from our Circus Sportsbook studio. Joe Serralo hanging with me. Fun final hour coming up, Joe. We will do the segment that we've really been waiting for this entire time, our top five foods to be served at a 4th of July or any sort of barbecue. And I'm expecting Joe to take off the shirt, throw on the apron over there in LA, because I know you've got resources. We wait for that to come up in about a half hour. Also, rest of the baseball card. Joe, I know you have some bets here for the rest of the night tonight. One that does really intrigue me here, one of the 7 p.m. Eastern first pitches that we'll discuss between two teams who are certainly in postseason position, one on the wrong side in the San Francisco Giants, the other there clinging on to the first of the 3 NL wild card spots in the Atlanta Braves. Couple updates right now. The Cubs finally get off the schneid. It's been such a disastrous couple of weeks there for the Cubbies, but they get two homers from Ian Happ today. My fantasy team thanks you, Ian Happ. 10-2 win for Jameson Taillon over Christopher Sanchez. As once again, with all those Phillies out in the lineup, big market move against him, and it finally comes to fruition today. Cubs is short dogs win, and it goes over 7.5. Red Sox finally get there in 12 innings. Joe, that was a tough luck loser of the day. 2-2 going to extras, and a market that was staunchly in support of the under ultimately comes up short. Game goes over 8-6-5 to the Red Sox over the Marlins. And that is your latest right now with three games in progress as we speak. And the Orioles, who you discussed earlier in the show, with a nice two-run spot in the third inning to take a 2-0 lead, back in the O's, trying to take now a three-game lead on the Yankees atop the AL East today in Seattle.
Yeah, Corbin Burnes can't strike anyone out. I've seen so many two-strike counts. I think he has one strikeout through 2 1/3. So slightly frustrating there, but the Orioles up 2-0. Who else? Gunner. It wasn't a first inning homer. It was a third inning homer. Wow, that curveball just made Bliss look silly by Burnes. But yeah, so we'll see. I mean, if the Orioles win and Burnes doesn't get to 8 strikeouts, it's a wash because that was a plus money K-prop. So we'll see what happens there. Never going to cry about a wash, especially when we've been on a heater. But it would just be nice. These Mariners swing at anything and everything. All of a sudden now, They're fouling two strike pitches off, being selective, not chasing those breaking balls in the dirt on 0-2 counts. I don't know what's going on there, but not looking good for the K prop as he's about to throw his 40th pitch.
It is Corbin Burnes, though. You know he could catch fire at any moment. 2-0 there. 0-0 between Ronzi Contreras of the Angels, J.P. Sears of the A's. A game neither of us have action on. 0-0 in the bottom of the third there. as well as in Texas, the only other game going live. Looks like the Padres are about to put the clamps down and send the Texas Rangers to 9 games below .500. Michael King, a very good outing today, limiting the Rangers to just a single run, 3-1 there, bottom nine, in a game that has gotten more market support to the under there, Joe. That thing close, 7.5 juiced heavily, -125 to the under. Looks like it'll get there as the Padres, hey, give them a lot of credit, though. They have come alive these last couple of weeks. We're the hottest hitting team in baseball. Now they're doing it with pitching. I saw them in person a couple weeks ago at Petco, and they took 3 of 4 from my hometown Milwaukee Brewers. And it's a team that we've waited for, what, like 3 years for them to actually show their true colors and live up to expectations. And it seems like they're finally starting to turn a corner. It's only taken the worst crop of NL playoff teams after the division leaders we've seen in years for them to do so.
Yeah, the Padres are interesting. You know, I think a lot of people give them maybe more credit than they deserve for the last 3 years because they made it to an NLCS and, you know, took that series, took Philly pretty deep into that series. But the truth is the Padres have found their success in the past 3 years by getting on these little really hot spurts of action. They haven't been a consistent winner for the better part of 3 years. They've spent more time at or below 500. It's just, you know, they snuck into the playoffs in 2022. Well, I won't say snuck in. They had a pretty good record. But they got in as a wild card, then they got really hot at the right time. But they've been underperforming for the bulk of the past 3 years. And now this year, you know, they might be working their way into the playoffs. I'll give them credit. I thought that they were going to be a third place team. I didn't have them in the playoffs. We'll also see what happens. I was very high on Arizona coming into the year. I'm still not out on Arizona because their starting pitching is just starting to get a little bit healthy. They still need Eduardo Rodriguez and Merrill Kelly back. Those are going to be two huge acquisitions. When those guys get off the IL, it's going to be like you've traded for two great starters at the deadline. So I'm still high on Arizona, but right now San Diego's certainly padding their lead ahead of the D-backs and other wild card contenders as the deadline approaches.
No question. It also speaks to perception on San Diego that despite the great run to the NLCS, we still mostly, outside of that, remember a very frustrating, enigmatic regular season that ultimately culminated in a hot streak. Funny how it is working out with them right now. We'll talk more baseball a little bit later in the show. 4 games left for us to break down. We will do that coming up. But Joe, as part of our NFL betting guide being released, we're now diving into all the different futures markets that are out there. And these have become very popular because it is not one that requires you to sweat it out a full season and wait until January to collect winnings. Or if you've got a ticket that just has no chance, you still have to see it and your account is pending. That's the worst when it's sitting there for months on end. But the final winless team and the final undefeated team, both very intriguing markets. We'll start to the bad here, Joe, the last winless team, as it is an interesting handicap of your combining poor teams with tough schedules out of the gates. What jumps out to you as you look at that last winless team market where the Patriots are your favorites at about 6-1?
Yeah, I mean, the Patriots are pretty understandable favorites here. Minnesota jumps out to me as a team with potentially some value. I don't have all of their schedules in front of me to dissect the Pats, the Panthers, the Titans, the Vikings. But I think Minnesota, with their question marks at quarterback, be it Darnold, be it McCarthy, you know, New England, probably the most realistic pick here. But if you're looking for value, I believe the Vikings have a pretty tough start to the season. Once you get past the Giants, and I think the Giants win that week one game. So if we can get that Vikings schedule up, I think it gets pretty difficult after the Giants so that they could be in a position where if they don't steal one week one, they could be in some real trouble.
And that's part of what goes into this too. For the season, Vikings, the fourth toughest strength of schedule by the Vegas win totals that are out now. A lot of transition to when you're bringing in a new quarterback, regardless of who the team decides to start in week one. That's why those are two kind of keys to me when I look at this. Transition, uncertainty, combined with tough schedule. We see it every year too with young head coaches, especially when it is a new head coach and a guy who has been a play caller but never the head man and who insists on still calling plays. And that's what Brian Callahan is going to attempt to do in Tennessee. Only Kyle Shanahan is the other who does that in the NFL and has done it well over the years. That's why he's still doing it. But that's a really tough transition to make. You're talking about a really young team. They've gutted so much within that front office and the roster composition of the Tennessee Titans. That's where I would look at 9-1. And it's a situation where, yes, you get 2 home games your first 3 weeks, but those are tough ass at home to the Jets and Packers where fan split might be 50-50 or better in favor of the road team in each of those two games. And if you don't get a win in either of those, you're looking at road Miami, tough divisional game against the Colts, at Buffalo, at Detroit. It's not till, looking at this, Joe, as I look down my list here, week eight against New England, where you will likely be favored in a home situation. That very easily could be an 0-7 start, especially if you are a believer that transition is as hard as it has proven to be in the past there with Brian Callahan.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly am, you know, on the Titans under 6.5 wins. I just, their offense, if you look at them compared to, you know, Minnesota, Carolina, New England, Minnesota's got talent with Justin Jefferson and Addison, obviously. But I really think that Tennessee has some talent on the offensive side. Like Minnesota, they have questions at quarterback, but Will Levis, you know, might be better than Darnold or McCarthy. I don't know if I would take Tennessee to be the last team to get a win. I just think that their offensive talent might break through at some point and surprise some people here and there. Again, I'm on them under 6.5, but I could see a surprise early out of Tennessee between Callahan and their personnel on offense.
They take on Chicago on the road as well, week one. You figure there will be quite a bit of emotion in that game. A lot of expectations there on the Bears in week one. As for the flip side here, we take a look at the teams on the last undefeated market that the 72 Dolphins will likely, I mean, it's almost close to a guarantee, will get to enjoy the spoils of their record standing for another season. Niners plus 750 to be the last undefeated team. Lions second at 8-1. Then you do have the Dolphins and Chiefs co-favorites at 10-1. It's funny how I always get a little bit more interested in the last winless team as opposed to the undefeated team, because it's a market that I really don't want anything to be a part of with it, Joe, just in full transparency. But anything here that stands out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I hate to play the favorite, but I think the 49ers have a legitimate chance at being the last unbeaten. You know, when you look at San Fran's schedule, and this is one that, you know, I broke down the entirety of the NFC West a week ago with Dave Ross, so I have their schedule actually memorized pretty decently. I see the Niners, I said 7-1 into the bye was my prediction, and I think that they have a couple difficult games right before that bye. But as long as they get past the Jets week one, which I think they will do, Aaron Rodgers has always stunk at San Francisco. It gets really easy after that week one game, which should be a fun contest on Monday night. So yeah, you see the Vikings, they're at the Rams. The Rams don't scare me this year, and that'll be a pro 49er crowd. You got the Pats, the Cardinals, the Seahawks never really stop San Francisco. It's Chiefs Cowboys, the Cowboys game. I'll give them a win. It's really that Chiefs game. So, you know, they could be 8-0 going into week 10 if they beat Kansas City. If not, then, you know, I think 6-0 might be enough to be the last undefeated team. I love Detroit, and I'm high on the Lions this year, higher than most. I don't think that they will come out of the gate 7-0. So I think San Francisco and the Kansas City, they've the past couple of years shown us that they'll lose some regular season games that you can argue they shouldn't lose. So I think San Fran 6-0 could get them that unbeaten title.
Yeah, the way I normally get interested in this show is if you see a team that's got like a pick 'em week one, right, and then it eases up. But because of the tough start, you get longer odds. Philadelphia is the one team that does match that, where it's Green Bay. That's viewed to be a pick 'em. Eagles short favorites there in Sao Paulo in Brazil, the neutral site game. But after that, you get three straight games against the worst division in football, at least arguably the NFC South. 6-0 is very much attainable, but it's that big question of if for week one. So I'm always a believer of, you know, if you want to take the high variance position on that, you're getting 17-1, but you probably should not just bet that alone. It should be, hey, all right, you'd look at Philadelphia if you had that much conviction in a week one spot against Green Bay, which to me, it's a toss up. I make the teams about even, and that's where the odds makers have it set. So many markets, though, for us to dive into. That's why we try to, you know, pick and choose, parse through all of them in the build up to this 2024-25 NFL season. We'll break down a 4-game night slate on the July 4th card in Major League Baseball when we come back here on Sharp Money.